Hey, Shalom Aleichem Ravos, I hope all is well. Today's daf is Shabbos, daf Kuf Chaf Gimel. We are going right there in topics of Muktzah. We had mentioned that in the first mission of the Perek, of Perek Kol HaKelim, that you're allowed to use a bunch of these random Kelim that in general would be thought of as Klishim Malacha L'Isser, a hammer and a saw and whatever. If you're using it for a mutter purpose, like the classic example of taking a hammer to crack open nuts, so that would be mutter. And then we're going to talk about exactly what the case is, what's going on over here. So what are the two dots in Kuf Chaf Beis on the Beis? Towards the bottom, notel adam kornos, a person can take a hammer, etc., etc. So Amar Rav Yehuda, what type of hammer is this? So he says, kornos shelagozim liftsoa bo eshagozim, right? You're allowed to take a hammer of nuts, meaning a hammer that you use to crack open nuts, right? That's mutter. Aval shana pachim, but if you took a blacksmith's hammer, so that is usher. Rabbi Yehuda apparently kasavar, apparently holds davar shemalachto l'iser afilu tzorach gufo usher. That a davar shemalachto l'iser, right? A kli shemalachto l'iser, like a blacksmith's hammer. Right, it's also a filuch l'tzorach gufo. Even if you need it, and that's a category that needs to be, we need to make sure to reinforce. Right, that's when we say something that's klishim l'tzorach the gufo. That means you need it for something, for it. Meaning you need it for its use. You need to use the item. Right, l'tzorach gufo. It's a kind of a weird phrase. L'tzorach gufo, for the need of its body, for the need of itself. That's just basically Gemara speak for it. You need to use the item for something that you're doing right now, something that is mutter. I don't know if this is the makor, but it's a takeoff of tzarach makomo. Right? Let's say the hammer was resting on a bed and you want to go to sleep. So there you would move the hammer to tzarach makomo because you needed the place. The tzarach gufo is when you need the actual hammer to do something that is mutter. But here apparently Rav Yehuda holds that darush malachto le'iser, it's a klishim malachto le'iser, is also you're not allowed to use that item for anything, right? Even if it is a mutter use. Okay, so amalei rabba sete malamiyata, if that's true, if that's really what the pshat of the Mishnah is, that we're talking about a klishim malachto le'heter, but a klishim malachto le'iser is also to use for a mutter purpose, so say for the Gatani, what about the second part of the Mishnah? If it's a rachas, there's a malgez, we said that that's a shovel or a pitchfork to feed a child. Well, if the equivalent of a hammer is a hammer that is mutter to use because it's to feed, to crack open nuts, so reses umalgeiz mi miachidei lekotan. There is no comparable utensil for a pitchfork or a shovel that is used for a katan. Right? Hammers, okay, I get hammers. They're all different types of hammers. But you would imagine if they're all taught together in the Mishnah, they're all common, they have the same thing, you know, they're all the same type. So what kind of mutter pitchfork shovel thing is there for to feed a katan? Rama says, no, the case in the Mishnah is kornos shel napachin, that's all process that goes in. The case is you're allowed to use a blacksmith's hammer to open up nuts, kasavar, davar shemalachto l'iser, that's our kufo, mutter. And then Rama holds that an item that is technically klishim malachto l'iser, if you're going to, again, something that, to redefine these concepts, because they're important when you study Muktzah, klisha malachto leheter is a utensil that is used for something that's mutter, like, I don't know, a fork. Klisha malachto leiser is a kli that is used for something that is, in general, will be usher on Shabbos, like a blacksmith's hammer, you're not allowed to hammer out metal or whatever it is. And the tzorach gufo is just to use that hammer, the blacksmith's hammer, for a different mutter purpose than what it's usually used for. So Esvei by the Rabba, Rabba hold. Abaye said against the Rabba, hold on, I don't like your pshat. Abaye said like this. It's actually, I think it's a Gemara. Tomorrow's daf. Medocha in Yeshba Shum. If you have a medocha, right? Again, back in the day, we said that the way they used to grind either spices or whatever, or maybe herbs to for medicine. They would use, back in the day, a mortar and a pestle, which is basically a mortar is a kind of like a bowl, and a pestle is like a hand, almost like a, a hand grinder, but it's like it's a blunt piece of wood that you would simply just smash the items that are in the bowl. So if you have a medocha, which is the mortar, part of a mortar and pestle, Miyesh Bashum, if you still have garlic inside of it, so then metaltalim, so then it's mutter. And then you're allowed to move it because you know it's literally just a bowl, yeah, holding garlic. If there is no garlic in there, so ain't metaltalim, so you're not allowed to move it. Right, mistama, right, even for some sort of mutter reason. Right, apparently you see that klisha malach leiser is also the tzorech gufo. So, or later, Rabbi said back to Abaye, how many? Whose shita is that? That's Rabbi Nechemyahi. The Amar, inklini tal el tzorech tashmisho, who says that Rabbi Nechemyah has an even more stringent shita. He says that a klisha malach leheter is only allowed to be used for its purpose. So if you have, I don't know, a fork, you can only use it for eating. You can't use a fork to, I don't know, hold the place in your Gemara. Like that is the, I mean, that's probably not a good example, but you understand what I'm saying. So therefore, that's not a sheet I have to worry about. That's Rabbi Nechemyah. Okay, fine. Eisvei, hold on. If I ask Rabbi again, now the parentheses here, we usually skip parentheses, as it says on the side that the Rashal is mochig mem zayin, mochig zayin, he erases this. But it's good to read the Taka here for the context. Beishami Omrim, Beishami says, in notlanesa eli lekater v'lav is a basur. You're not allowed to take, this is not the mortar, but the pestle. Right? You're not allowed to take the pestle to cut up meat. And Beis Hillel matirin, Beis Hillel allow it. V'shavim, but they agree, she'em kite v'lav basur, but if you have chopped meat, with it, so then also the Taltal that you're not allowed to move it. Meaning for anything else. So you see again that seems to say that klisha malachto le iser is aser for even if you're gonna use it in a mutter scenario. So the Gemara says Sar Lishnuni like Rabbi Nechemyah. Originally Rabbah was gonna be like, no, that's also Rabbi Nechemyah. But Kevin, right, because again, Rabbi Nechemyah said that even klisha malach leheter is also to use for a different mutter purpose than it's usually intended for. So, but then he said, Kevin the shama lahad amar Rav Chanina bar Shalme, mishmei derav. Once you heard this, that I call modem misike zayre umizore, everybody agrees with these items that are used usually in weaving and I guess. Let's see over here. Yeah, in terms of some long rods and some spikes and like a comb. Okay, everybody agrees in terms of those kalim that are usually used for weaving. They came in the kapit alayhu because since someone is careful about them, someone doesn't want to use them for any other purpose because they may get damaged. Right, that's already infringing on a concept called mukta machmas chisaron kis, that a person won't use an item because he's afraid that it'll get damaged. So if the item is valuable, so that's Mukta Machmas Chisaron Kis. So once Rabbah heard that shita, sorry, I didn't finish it. Came to the Kapan Elayah, since this person is careful and cares about them, these kalim that are valuable, so Miyachel Humakom, he makes sure that there's a place for them on Shabbos and doesn't move it. So Haninami, so too, this could also be with the mortar and the pestle, Miyachel Lehu Makom, the person would also kind of put them aside, and therefore that could be the very call. It doesn't necessarily have to be Rabbi Nechemyah, and therefore when Rabbah went back and said that no, that these items that you're bringing me a kasha on, those are just mukta machmas chisaron kis, a little kasha because I don't know how valuable of mortar and pestle were. Okay, could be that those are fine. Or, alternatively, could be that simply, you know, a mortar and pestle could be that they're not so valuable, but since they're not usually used on Shabbos, they also already miyachid lehumakom, that the ikar pshat could be that perhaps, now that I think about it, is that since the guy puts it in a specific designated place in his cabinet, so it's not intended to move, so therefore his kavana was to make them mutzah, right? Not intended to use them at all. Whereas, let's say, you know, I guess a hammer, you know, would be lying around, and you could use it somewhere, but in a chanami, if you designated a hammer in a specific place, they should, I don't know, hang on the wall somewhere, so that could be that it would be usher as well. Okay, fine. Itmar, it was, again, all these, the gemaras, these are the basis for hilchos mutzah. But don't, nothing halacha l'maisa. Make sure you study the halachos and delve into it before you know, using something that you hear in one of these shiurim, you know, al pi halacha, it's always you know, good not to take it at face value and kind of do a little bit more research. Okay, either way, that's basically a disclaimer in case I say something that's not entirely accurate. Okay, either way, weiter. Itmar, we said, the Gemara says, B'chiyah bar Abba Amram B'yochanan, Kurnos shel zahavim shaninu. Actually, our Mishnah is talking about a goldsmith's hammer. Not a blacksmith's hammer, but a goldsmith's hammer. The difference is because, is that a blacksmith can simply, if it's used for another purpose, so you can just hammer it out on the anvil, right? We said that's Makabu Patish, right? We talked about that. A goldsmith's hammer, if it can get messed up more easily, because, again, it's a little bit more fine, and it can get, you know, you need it for a little bit, the work you're doing with it is a little bit more fine, so you're more concerned that it may get damaged if you use it for another purpose. But here, apparently the Mishnah says, according to Rabbi Yochanan, that a goldsmith's hammer, a goldsmith will not be particular about his hammer, you can even use it to crack open nuts. Rabbi Shalom bar Abba Amar, that we're talking about, no, Kurnos shel besamim shaninu, an even more delicate hammer that is used for banging and crushing spices. So the one says, Ma'an damar besamim, someone who says that the Mishnah is talking about a besamim, a spice hammer, so kol shein dezahavim, certainly would hold that a goldsmith's hammer is mutter to use. Ma'an damar dezahavim, but the guy who says that the Mishnah is talking about is a goldsmith's hammer, and that's mutter to use the crack nuts, so besamim kapit alayu, but the spice hammer, that, as we said before, that's more delicate, and a person who would normally use that for crushing spices would not want it used for other purposes. Okay. Yes, a kush is a karkar. Okay, these were different items that that a weaver would use, and you would use it, the Mishnah said, to stab fruit, right? To kind of use it to stab fruit. Okay, Tanu Rabbanan. The Gemara is going to explain. This is already a sugya called Tiltul Min Hatzad, which is when you're taking something in not the normal way. As we'll see in a second. Tanu Rabbanan Brisa says, Paga Shetmana Batevin. If you have an unripe fig, I think, yeah, Rashi says Tena Shelo B'Shala Kol Tzarcha. Okay, so a paga is an unripe fig. It's buried in straw, and Rashi says here that it's the purpose is so that it will ripen. V'charora Shetmana B'Gecholam, and that's so you have some sort of cake, some sort of baked good that is buried in Gecholam, in coals. To keep it, you know, meaning to bake, and you know, and as the fire goes out, I assume that it'll get better, or whatever it is, it's kept in the coals to heat and bake, and then I assume some of the process is that on Shabbos you would take it out because it'd be ready. Right, that was their oven, right? If you don't have an oven or whatever, so in Megula Miktsasa, if it's a little bit open, if any of those two items, the fig or the cake, are open, right on top, meaning it's not completely buried. In the item it's insulated in, so then mutar l'tatala, then you can move it. Vim la, but if not, then also l'tatala, then it is also to move it. Now, obviously, the food is not mukza, but we're told the concern is that you're going to move the items it's buried in, right? If it's not, if it's totally, you know, subsumed underneath, I don't know, the coals or whatever, so then when you take it out, you're going to move the coals, and that's going to be a problem. Rabbi Lazar ben Tadai, Omer Rabbi Lazar ben Tadai says, Tochvin bakosh ova karkar, even if it's buried, so you can take these items that we mentioned in the Mishnah and stab it, vahein minaros me'alehen, and all the other items, meaning the straw or the coals, will fall on their own. Meaning, as long as you don't move the straw or the coals yourself, but you kind of get at the item you want and then lift it out and the other stuff falls away by itself, so that is, yeah, that is mutter, because you're, what's it called, it's tiltum outside, you're moving it kind of like secondarily, incidentally, and that is mutter. And I'm Rav Nachman, halacha, karvelaz ben tadoi, and that's taka, the halacha. The member the sever of Nachman and tiltum outside, lo shmei tiltum, does that mean that Rav Nachman himself holds that tiltum outside is not considered real carrying? I'm Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman says, hi pugla, pugla is a tznon, which is a radish. So milmala, again it's been buried in the ground. Yeah, as Rashi says, shetz minu ba'aretz, from this gala rosho, where you can see the top of it, right? The little the green on top of the radish is exposed. So milmala lamata shari, you're allowed to take it from top to bottom to kind of yank it out. But mimata lamala, But if the green part is upside, it's on the bottom. You buried it with the green part outside, inside the dirt. Sorry. So then it's also to move it. Meaning again, the idea is that you can get at it. Meaning if the top of the radish is inside the ground, you cannot get at it, and it's completely kind of covered in the ground. So apparently, Rav Nachman says you're not allowed to dig out something that's completely insulated or surrounded. So Gemara says, "Hadar bei Rav Nachman me'ahi inochanami," that Rav Nachman took that ruling back because of this statement of Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik. So Rav Nachman took his psak about the radish back, and therefore there is no, obviously, no steer. Machat yesh ya machat shariad litol, you're allowed to take a needle to take out a splinter. The Mishnah said, "Shalach le Rava berei de Rava le Rav Yosef." Yaldeinu Rabbeinu, Rabbi, teach us. Machat shenitol charara o uktza mahu. What about a needle whose hole, or I guess it's called an eye, right? Whose eye or the point was taken off. So is that considered still a clear knot? You're allowed to take a needle to take out a splinter. What does the splinter matter, whether it has an eye or not? But obviously, there's no ish, there's no difference. Right? You need the sharp point. Right? So it must be that it's totally fine. It must be, you can still consider a kli. Hold on, I ask a question. Let's say you took out the eye of the needle. It is tahor, is no longer considered a kli. It's seemingly not mekabel tuma. So you see that a kli, apparently if you take off the eye, it's no longer a kli, it's not useful. So why should it still be considered a kli? So Amar Abai, tuma, Shabbos karamis. Don't ask me kasha about tuma. We're talking about halacha Shabbos. Right? Tuma, kli maisa binan. What's the rule by tuma? Tuma, something that's mekabel tuma, if it's a kli maisa. If it's a utensil that can be used. Right, if the eye is removed from a needle, so you can no longer use it to stitch stuff, right? But then in Shabbos, meaning the chazi bayinan, all you need for Shabbos is something that is usable, right? You may not use that needle to stitch, but it's a kli in terms of you can take out splinters, you can do other things with it. So its basic purpose is gone. But lemaisa, the hagdara by Shabbos is totally different than the hagdara by tuma, and therefore don't ask me kashas. And this needle, which with no eye, is still able to take out a splinter. So Rava says, no, Mam the Kamosiv, Shoper Kamosiv. The guy, the one who asked the Kasha, asked a good Kasha. You can ask the Kasha from Tuma to Shabbos, because with the Linian Tuma, Lav Monahu, Linian Shabbos, Nami Lav Monahu. Right? If it's not considered a Kli by Tuma, it's also not going to be considered a Kli by Shabbos. Meizve, hold on 1 second, they ask a question now on Rava. Wait, what do you mean? Whether a needle has an eye or not, motor the tatal of Shabbos, you're allowed to move it on Shabbos. Below amru nekuva el in tumah bilvad. Right, the only issue with the eye of the needle, whether it has or not, is only shayach to tumah. So you see that tumah and Shabbos are different. So the Gemara says, "Targum Abaye, leave it to Rava." So Rabbi explained this price according to Rava, right? In terms of Rava, who says that there's no difference between Shabbos and tumah. So what's the case? Begul miyaskino. The case is where the needles have not been finished yet. Meaning they're not considered. It's not considered a kli, but it is useful on Shabbos. The zin in demim lachalayu b'shabbos l'umana. Because sometimes instead of making an eye, so just say, you know what? I'll just use this needle as it is. So therefore, it's considered a kli by Shabbos. Aval heicha denita charara uksa. But if you already broke the eye or the point, so adam zorka lebena grutaros, the person's going to throw it out. He's not going to use it. He's not going to keep it around. He's going to just go get a different needle. So therefore, it's no longer a kli, and it is muktza. And therefore, if it's tahor, in the case where it broke, so therefore, if it's tahor, then it's no longer a kli on Shabbos, because the person's going to discard it, and then it loses its status on the kli. Okay. Asuve yanuka. So this is seemingly nothing to do with anything. Rashi says fascinating that lahachlik seder ivarav kishu nolad. Yanuka is a child, is a baby. It's apparently some sort of relocating or kind of making sure that the ivarim, the limbs of a child, are straight. Rashi is Tzarek Liashvan, right? It's not, I don't, you could, if you could imagine popping a joint back into place, but for whatever reason, Rashi says, because you're Nolad, because of the birth, maybe he had a very tumultuous birth, and some things are dislocated, out of, you know, not so straight. So basically, making this this kid's limbs kind of normal, cracking things back into place or whatever. So it's a machlokas whether you're allowed to do that on Shabbos. So Rav Nachman Aser, Rav Shesh is Shari. Wait, what would possibly be the Iser? It's not Rafua, as we're going to see in a second. And Rashi says here, the Dami Lamatakin. It's fascinating. It's almost like you're Tikkun Mona. It's almost like you're fixing something. You're kind of popping the joint back into place. You're fixing something. Rav Nachman says, again, to kind of support his Iser Shita, so Menag, Allah, how do I know that's not? No, did I Mishnah? Ein Osin. Apikvizin b'Shabbos. You cannot make an apikvizin. Well, what is that? So Rashi over here says at the top it was some sort of potion that people would drink, not for refuah, but to allow themselves to vomit and get out all of the stuff in their stomach so they could eat and drink more. Fascinating. Doesn't sound pleasurable, but okay. And so Rashi says it's not a refuah because a person doesn't need to be healed. Rashi says, "Aser mishum." At the last line in the first Rashi, "Aser mishum metakin gavra." It's like you're fixing the person. You're cleaning the pipes. You're cleaning the guy out. So you're not allowed to take one of those things. That will cause you to throw everything up in your system. So that seems to be the same thing. You're trying to fix the guy. You're trying to make him better, but enable him to be back to your pristine state or whatever. So Gemara says, Rav Shesha is Hasam Lav Orche. No, but Rav Shesha, I guess you should be Amar Rav Shesha, since he's missing a word, it's weird. Okay, either way, Rav Shesha explains, no, Hasam Lav Orche, that's weird. Well, that's not something you should be doing normally, but Hacha, in terms of straightening the kit, making sure they pop the joints back into place, that's Orche, that's normal, right? That's what you want to make sure a kid grows up, a baby grows up with his limbs in appropriate fashion. So that's why that would be different. That's why you could disprove Rav Nachman's proof that it's also. I'm Rav Sheshes, and this is, I guess, yeah, all right, whatever. I mean, Allah, how do I know that this is true? It's not, because we're in our Mishnah. This is the relationship. This is why we brought this. Machat shel yad litol bo hazakot. You're allowed to take a needle, take out a splinter. Right? Lachora, taking out a splinter is metakein, fixing a person. Right? If, I guess making his skin smooth or making him not in pain or whatever. All right, but Rav Nachman has something to say back to him. So, because Hasan pocket, right there by the splinter, that's not fixing a person because a guy has a splinter in his skin. Nothing is wrong really per se. He's just got a splinter inside, right? Hacha lo pocket, but in terms of the limbs are mamish inside the body. Right? So that's literally, if you can imagine, putting something together. So you're literally putting limbs back together. So according to Rav Nachman, that would be aser mishum metakin. Okay. Next Mishnah. Kana shel zeisim. If you have a kana, which is usually a reed, some sort of stick, Rashi says here that they used to use this stick to check olives in the press to make sure they were ripe and that they would produce a proper olive oil. So that is considered a kli eitz. Right, that's considered a. I skipped Mishnahs. My bad. Back to the first Mishnah. Kana shel zeisim in yesh kesher berosho. If it has a knot in the top of it, and we'll see exactly what the point of that knot would be. So then it's mekabel tuma v'imlav, and if not, then it's in mekabel tuma. It's not considered a kli. Benkach or benkach, but regardless, nital b'Shabbos, you can still take it on Shabbos. And the Gemara says, "Am I?" Right, so the Gemara says, "One second. What does this not have to do with anything?" Pshute etzu, pshute kli etzu. It's a stick. It's a kli etz. Pshute kli etz in a mekabel tuma, and a long stick that does not have a base kibul. Right, we explained a long time ago, I think, towards the beginning of the Masechta, that for kli etz, for a wooden utensil, it needs to have a base kibul. It has to have something like a spoon or a bowl or something. To be able to accept items into it. Otherwise, it's not going to be considered a kli in terms of being mekabel tuma. So this wooden stick is a kli eitz, and if it's so pashut, meaning it's straight, it's doesn't have a base kibbutz, so it's not going to be mekabel tumah. So why should it be? Why the Mishnah says it depends on whether it has this knot or not. So the Gemara says, "My time of dumya disak." Ah, sorry, that's the reason why he needs to have a base kibbutz. My time of dumya disak has to be similar to a sack. We said the pasuk says, "We beged or of sack." We compare the those items. Eitz also is included in that pasuk. Right, I mean, kol kli eitz, obegad or osak, right, any, all of those items needs to have something that is contained inside of it. So the Gemara says, Tana b'shmet Rabbi Nechemia, b'sha shemahapech b'zesim hof chol v'ro'obo. Because what does this knot do, and why is the knot crucial? The knot, when you take the olives, how do you check whether they're ripe? So apparently the knot had a little bit of a base kibbutz, a little bit of a hole, where you could check, or you can kind of like press the olive a little bit, like turn the stick a little bit, and you could see on the bottom, and you'd have a little bit of oil there pooled on the bottom, and you can check, I guess, the viscosity or the veracity or the quality of the oil, and that is how you could tell whether they were ripe or not. So therefore, if it has the knot, then you're in a chanami. This Mishnah works out totally fine, because it has a base kibbutz. If it doesn't have the knot, so then it does not, and therefore it is not mekabel tumah. Okay, next Mishnah. Rabbi Yossi Omer called a kelim nitlim. You can take all kelim on Shabbos. Chutz mi masar hagadol v'yaseid shal ma'charesh. What is that? So those are two items. Rashi says, if you look, masar hagadol, magira gadola shalso yliktos koros. A huge saw that is made for cutting beams. Okay, that's a meser. What's a yaseid shal ma'charesh? Hu kli gadol hasui kisakin. Again, another knife-type item. Shabo osin choretz shal telem hama'ane. Where you make a what's it called? A ditch. It's cut into a field. Danach kapad alayu, and for these things, right, the owner is concerned about them. Again, mukta machmas, perhaps chisaron kis, he's very careful, or miyachin lahem makom, where he's going to make a place for them. The luchazul lemelech acher is because they're not fit for anything else. So all the kelim Rabbi Yossi says are mutter to be taken, except for these two items. Now, Gemara is going to go actually into a little bit of the history of mukta, which is fascinating. But before we get there, let's see a little bit else. Amar of Nachman. Rav Nachman being prominent in Radaf today. Hai Uchla de Katsri. The Uchla de Katsri is, Rashi says, Kli Nechoshes, a copper utensil, Ha'osu Kenafet, like a sieve. Nekav V'u Shal Kosem, and it's used by launderers. So you can imagine it's a big Kli that is used by launderers, and you put the clothing in there, and then you kind of like pour through water and whatever you need, and mix it around in there. So that big kli, kiyosin shal machareshah damya. It's exactly like the yateid, exactly like the plow, meaning it's usher to be moved and used on Shabbos. Amar Abaye, charva du'ush kofi, ashes sakin shel retzanin. That is a knife of tanners, TA, right? It's people who tan skins. So a knife that's used by tanners, v'sakina de ashkavasa, and that's a butcher's knife, v'chatzina de nagri, and a carpenter's kind of cutting utensil. I don't know if he uses a knife, but whatever it is. So kiyasi shamachoreshu damu, they're also similar to these single handheld plow type thing that we pointed out for making a ditch on the ground. Similar to that kli, and they are mukso, because people don't want them getting damaged. Right, so again, so therefore they're mustama klisha machmas mutsva muksa machmas chisankis. Tan Rabbanan, we know the Rabbi. Now here we go. Barishona hayu omrim shlosha kelim nitlum b'shabbos. Back in the day, they said you can take only three kelim on Shabbos outside of all the, as Rashi explains, outside of all of the ones that are normally used for food, let's say a cup or a fork or whatever. So aside from that, Chazal needed to make a gzera, as we'll see in a second. There was a widespread chilul Shabbos, so they said you can only take three kelim. Maktzoa shel dvela, a knife that you cut, a cake of figs. Vezuam alistrin shel kedera, and a ladle for taking, what's it called, for scooping out a pot. The sakin ketan shal gavei shulchan, and a small knife that's on the table. And then itiru v'chazru, itiru v'chazru v'itiru. Right, and then they made things that it became progressively more makil. This gzera of mukta, ad shalomru until Chazal said, kol kelim nitlum b'shabbos. You can take any kelim chutz min masar gadol v'yaseid shal macharesha, like we said in our Mishnah. So Gemara says, "My etiru v'chazru, etiru v'chazru v'etiru." What does it mean that they became mutter, 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 mutter? So Rabbi explains, "Etiru, what were they made killed by? First, davar shemalach b'leheter l'tzarach gufo. You were able to use it, a kli shemalach b'leheter for a mutter use. V'chazru v'etiru davar shemalach b'leheter l'tzarach makomo. Then they said you can use a kli shemalach b'leheter for its place, meaning if it was lying on a bed, you could move it, and so you could go to sleep. The chazur b'tiru, and then they went and they said it was mutter to use davar shemalachto le'iser, that for you to use a kli shemalachto le'iser, the tzarach gufo and the tzarach makom alo, only for its own sake, meaning to use it to, let's say, crack open a nut, but not to move it off of a bed if you wanted to go to sleep. That dayin b'yado achas in b'shteyadav lo, and still that was only all these kalim was only if you can move it with one hand and not with two. Okay, ashamru until people they said finally they said kol kalim b'shabbos v'afilu b'shteyadayim, you can take any kalim you want on Shabbos even with two hands. Amalei Rava, Rava said to him, no, michti. Let's see, hitiru katani. It says that it was mutter malitzurch gufo. What is the difference between using a kli shemalach v'leheter for its own reason, meaning because you need it, or because of the place that it's lying on? Right? Why would that be any different than a kli shemalach v'leheter? I take it back. Not necessarily kli shemalach v'leheter, also kli shemalach v'leheter, but the Rebbe says, what's the difference between using an item for itself or because you needed the place it was lying? But I say you have some tzorech. Some tzorech should dictate that I'm allowed to use and move this kli. El Amarava, Sir Rava said that the gradual heterim was like this. The first stage was, they said, any kli shemalach v'leheter is mutter regardless of what you need it for. Then they said, you know what, you can even move it in from the sun to the shade if the item is going to get damaged, even though you don't need to sit in the sun or you don't need the place where it was lying. Then they allowed a kli shemalach v'leheter, if you needed it for any reason or any purpose, but not to save it from getting ruined in the sun. And that's only, again, if it was one person could move the kli, then yes, but two, then no. Okay, acha amru, until they said, kol kelim from Shabbos afilu b'shnei b'nei adam. Until finally they said, no, any kelim can be taken on Shabbos, even if two people need to move it, except for those two items we mentioned in the Mishnah. Esrei Abaye went back at Rava and said, what are you talking about? A brisa we quoted already, today. Medocha im yesh ba shum metaltel nosa. If you have a mortar that has garlic in it, then you can move it. V'imlav im metaltel nosa. Right, and then, but if it doesn't have any garlic, then you cannot move it. Right? Why? Meaning, in what scenario are you going to say that this price is talking about? Meaning, Abaye said that there was still usher to move a kli shemalach v'leheter for its letzorach makomo. But according to you, right, the kli shemalach v'leheter is mutter b'manashach. Right? So, in what scenario is it not allowed to be moved? So, right, if it doesn't have, right, I mean, what do you mean? If it doesn't have garlic on it, it can't be moved. What, you said that it's mutter. So, what's the case? Mechama letzel. But no, the case is where you want to move it in, not for any tzorech, but because you don't want it to get ruined. Right, okay, that's what Rava said was actually usher, still back in the end. Eisvei, we learned in Abaisa, another question on Rava. Veshavin, again, Veshamei and Veshillel agree. Shem kitev of baser shasal taltalo. Again, we quoted this before. If you chopped meat on it, on the pestle, so then you're not allowed to move it. So why wouldn't you be able to move it, according to you? So Rav would say back to him, Hachanami mechama l'tzel, because, nechanami, that you're just saving it from the sun to the shade, and therefore you're not allowed to move it out of the sun. Okay, a little bit more, just one more, a little more Indian, and then we'll stop for the day. Amar Rabbi Chanina, b'mei Nechemia ben Chachloi, ben Chachalia, forget, okay, I think that's how you pronounce it. Nishnei's Mishnah Zoo, this all happened in the days of Nechemia ben Chachalia. Tachthil, because the Pasuk says, Plus, in, not surprisingly, in Nehemiah, by him, Araisi biyuda dorchim gitos b'shabes mevien haremos. And during those at that time, I saw people in Yehuda pressing wine in a gat, in a vat, and on Shabbos, and bringing all these things, the aremos, bringing in stuff from the fields. Meaning people were mechal Shabbos like crazy, right? So therefore, that's when they put in these measures of mukta, and then obviously gradually rolled them back. But when there was widespread chilul Shabbos, Chazal felt the need to institute this concept of mukta that we're so familiar with nowadays. Okay, Mitzvah Shem, we'll go right to tomorrow. Have a great day or night, depending on where you're listening to this.